Hey, it's me, Brian Reeves. Have you ever considered working with a coach? Like maybe you've achieved success on the outside, but deep fulfillment is still missing inside? Or you're confronted with a massive challenge or choice in your life? Or your relationships aren't as fulfilling as you want them to be? Or maybe you're just tired of trying to figure life out all by yourself? Well, I invite you to apply for private one-on-one coaching with me. Since 2012, I've helped 1,000 men and women like you break through hidden barriers, deepen their relationships, especially the relationship with themselves, and step more fully into the life they were meant to live. Coaching isn't about getting advice. It's about deep transformation so that you can really hear and trust the wisdom and clarity already always within you. I only take on a few clients at a time, and I only work with men and women truly ready to do the work. So if you're up for an inner adventure as a pathway to meaningful change in your outer world, go to brianreeves.com/coaching, click an application link on that page to apply. That's Brian Reeves, Brian with a Y, reeves.com/coaching. The breakthrough you need could begin today. All right, let's get into today's episode.
If somebody would have taught me this when I was in my 20s, I would have gone through like 50% less pain. If you can use nonviolent communication, nonviolent meaning that you say what you heard, you acknowledge the person, you use reflectiveness, and then you recommit to something more beautiful, it changes the whole game.
Welcome to Bridging Connections, formerly known as Men This Way. I'm your host, Brian with a Y, Reeves, former U.S. Air Force captain turned author and professional coach to men, women, and couples. Alongside me as co-host, my lifelong friend of over 40 years, Tate Arendt. Here we have the raw, real conversations we need to be having about the topics that matter most: relationships, purpose, health, spirituality, and more. Please subscribe to stay connected. All right, let's dive. What does it really mean to live a liberated life in a world full of distractions, quick fixes, and surface-level wellness trends? How do we get underneath all that to live deeper, to live in ways truly aligned with the depths of our soul? Our guest today has been on a mission to answer that question. Josh Trent is the host of the popular Wellness and Wisdom podcast, where he's explored the intersection of mind, body, and soul with some of the most influential thought leaders in the world. And today, amongst other things, we're going to dive into what it means to live a liberated life. Josh, welcome to Bridging Connections, man.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here, man. Stoked.
I'm glad to have you. You've been host of this podcast since when? When did you start your podcast?
2015. I mean, I had a different name back then, but 2015. This is a 10th year of podcasting.
Wow, man. How many episodes, give or take?
700 and a half.
Holy moly, bro. That's incredible. Yes. I think this is like maybe episode 155 or so.
Sweet.
Which ain't no nothing, but we too have changed our name from Men This Way. I think when we booked you, we were called Men This Way, and now surprise, welcome to Bridging Connections. So glad to have you, man.
Yes.
And I'm curious, podcasting's no joke. You've been at this a minute. You've had so many conversations. How many of 750-ish podcasts, how many of those would you say have been with guests versus you individually?
Probably over 600, probably around 600.
With guests?
Yeah, 500 to 600 with guests. Yeah.
So, all right, let's distill every conversation you've ever had.
Right? Okay.
Into three. Give me three. Three, like what would you say are the top three? It's such a silly question, but I'm gonna ask it. Top three, advices, wisdoms, insights, or maybe just themes that you've learned from your own show over the years that you've really taken into your being, right? Like they impact your life on a daily basis.
The best way I could answer that would be what I'm still in the process of embodying, but that gives me the fuel source to do so. So I really lean on Dr. John DeMartini, Paul Check, and Teal Swan. Now, those are three really amazing voices that have impacted me in a way where I can say all the wisdom they've shared, it's both exciting and liberating, but it's also challenging because I'm not in nirvana and I'm not vibrating at 700 on the Hawkins scale yet. But I would say if I pulled intersections from those three people, and by the way, there's many, many more.
No doubt.
But there's a resounding wisdom that I'm still in the process of integrating in my life. And that is to be in accordance with nature's laws. Nature's laws, you know, a few of them are the law of reciprocity, the law of oneness, the law of polarity, the law of gender, right? The 12 universal laws. But really all those laws are directing us towards wholeness, completeness, and acceptance of self and identity of self and awareness of self. It's on the temple at the Apollo, right? Know thyself. So I think knowing Josh is an unfolding, ever-encompassing promise that I'm just totally committed to on a daily basis. Knowing Josh in all of his new forms, wisdom, to quote Napoleon Hill, is the ability to relate yourself to nature's laws as to make them serve you, and also to work in harmony with others so that you can get whatever you're demanding of life through these natural laws. So we could break down any wisdom from that nomenclature. I mean, that lexicon of like being in alignment with the laws of nature is where I believe liberation lives and breathes, but yet I'm still in the process of doing this, right? So that's probably one big one, to be in harmony with these natural laws. And then secondly would be to have a continuous clean out of resentment towards self or others. Yeah. Resentment is like, I believe it was Lao Tzu that said, resentment is like holding onto a hot coal, but you're the only one that ever gets burned. And I think that's so powerful because resentment is an energy drain, not just to myself, but also to the person that I'm holding resentment towards. They actually control me. There's a tether there. There's an energetic connection. And then the third would be the balancing of what I call the wellness pentagon, which is the embodiment and the nourishment of the five sides of self. It's the lens that I teach. It's the lens that I live my life by. And it's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and financial nourishment of self. So I guess we could start with those three paradigms. All of those are pretty juicy. I'm still in the process of embodying all those, but I think those are really, really beautiful goals for us to be working towards without, by the way, being attached, which is a whole nother lesson in itself, without being attached to being in perfection in the application of these laws.
Mm. You know, I'm 50. How old are you? How old are you, Josh?
44.
We're men of a similar age. You know, we've been at this game a minute. You know, we're not spring chickens in our spiritual seeking and our journey. And you know, I appreciate the last thing that you shared there as well, like to not be attached to the perfection as if there's some perfect expression of embodiment of, you know, to become the enlightened levitating master. I mean, again, you know, I think when I was in my 20s, I thought maybe that was something that I could aspire to. Maybe probably even in my 30s and maybe even a little bit into my 40s. But, you know, what I'm curious about, like this, the first one you shared, the laws of nature, right? I find that one interesting. You know, we live in a kind of a purity culture, at least in the, you know, in the yogic spiritual seeking wellness community, I feel like there's a trend towards purity. Right. Don't do vaccines. Don't eat processed food. Don't, you know, sort of move away from a Western medicine mindset. And, you know, I'm not trying to pick sides here, say one's better than the other, or do this or do that. What I'm more curious about is the laws of nature. I feel like that's one of those double-edged swords kind of thing. Like, what are we really talking about? What do you really mean when you say the laws of nature? Because are we talking about Serengeti laws? You know, the law of might makes right. That's a law of nature of sorts. Whoever has the most physical power will dominate the Serengeti, if you will. And that's probably not, anyway. Like, what do you mean when you say laws of nature? What are you talking about?
That's a really awesome jumping off point. So I'm speaking more to the spiritual and metaphysical portion of the universal laws. And there's 12 universal laws, and I don't know them all by heart, but I do have a really deep connection to this concept of homeostasis or harmony. And so I guess the best place to go here is to start with what you just shared, like the Serengeti law. In nature, there are certain power structures, like the closed organic cycle, or the predator-prey, triangles, the basically survival paradigms that animals are operating in. But here's one key that differentiates human law and human metaphysical and spiritual law from animal or reptilian ways of being. We have a prefrontal cortex. We have a amygdala. We have brain structures like the posterior cingulate. We have neurology that's connected to an extremely high-functioning neural tree and nervous system and neurology that allows us to process and have higher states of consciousness than just a tiger or a leopard or a lizard. So when I say universal natural law or being in harmony with nature's law, I don't mean that we need to act just like an animal. I think that it's the understanding that we're half beast and we're half spirit. In other words, like the soul of Josh, the soul of Brian is in a physical body. You're in a physical body. Yet, what's really interesting is that we have this neurology, we have this awareness and this ability to process and receive information that animals don't have. And so the natural laws that I'm talking about are the spiritual and metaphysical laws that we use as guidelines as human beings to learn how to be in a school of souls, love ourselves, love other people. There's just a certain fundamental set of principles, I believe, that allow us to be in harmony with life itself, God itself. You know, we're a unique soul having an experience in a body. It's something that we've heard about from ancient masters and contemporary masters. But to make it practical, we're essentially all here to learn. We're here to learn some kind of karmic burn, cosmic law. Who exactly knows what it really is? We could try to put words on it. We could try to explain it and be, you know, really diligent and perfect in our expression of what we believe truth actually is. But universal law just means that you're going with the flow of the current energetically in life instead of fighting it. And I guess something practical that I could share when you ask me, you know, what do you mean by being in harmony with nature's laws? We all know when we are hiding a secret from ourselves or from others. And I believe that we are, hands down, man, we are only as liberated as our darkest secrets. If I'm withholding a secret from you in this moment, there's some part of your enteric nervous system and your somatics that knows it. There's some part of me that knows you're either being your authentic self or not. And we just hold space for each other because being your authentic self is really challenging to do in this modern world. So what I'm saying is, like, anytime that we are in a state of dis-ease or eustress is positive stress, distress. So if we're in some kind of dis-ease or some kind of distress, you and I can feel it. That's an example of when we're out of alignment or we're out of the harmony of being in this natural law. And I think the best way to say that is we all know when someone is being themselves, we can just feel it. And that's why some of the guys you're in men's groups with and some of the guys that we respect in our industry, we feel peaceful when we're around them because they have embodied to a higher degree, not in perfection, but to a higher degree of being in alignment with nature's laws. Therefore, they've figured out through trial and error how to be aligned with themselves and with nature. And the very last thing I'll say is typically it's pain that's the purification process. You had said we're in this purity culture before. I think if we're really going to be in alignment with nature's laws, then we have to understand all the ways. We have to be able to look in the mirror and see every single way that we're not in alignment with us and with nature at the same time. Whether it's our food, our sleep, our EMF, our human relationships, our projections of our pain onto the women that we love, onto the people that we care about, leading our business in an integrity-based way, or lying to self or others. There's a lot here, man. So being in flow is essentially what I'm talking about. But being in flow doesn't just mean wearing a white cape and a fucking gold necklace with a chalice on it and having a crypto account, a breathwork program, and a community that you're launching in Costa Rica, with a man bun. That's not what I mean.
What stands out for me, and I really heard this in your answer as well, is there's an inquiry, right? Living well, if you will, living. I want to ask you. We'll talk directly in a moment. What do we mean by living liberated? But it's like even nature's laws. I'm thinking about. You know, I remember something. I think something Mark Twain pointed out many years ago that to call animals brutes, you know, humans we would call animals brutes is sort of an insult to animals. Because humans are far more brutish than animals. you know, animals don't kill just for the sake of killing. They kill because they're hungry or they're defending territory, right? With the lion on the Serengeti doesn't actually murder the gazelle he doesn't want to eat just because he's a psychopath, right? There is that harmony, that balance. I mean, on the Serengeti, and again, we're kind of using that example of a place where nature's laws exist without human interference. Balance is the way. Life is always, always seeking balance. And I think, you know, I think that's, you know, the name of the podcast, Bridging Connections. We are living in a world that is so polarized right now in our human conceptions of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been a deeply spiritual seeking man for most of my life. And I come from a family background where there was, in my family system, there was some, on my dad's side, there was some cultish shit going on. There was a lot of, you know, the sort of ungrounded, unbalanced spiritual fantasizing, you know, delusionality almost that took, it took me, and I don't have a relationship with my father today because it really took him away. It took him away from being in his body, being in a relationship to the earth, right? To me, to his own body, et cetera. And so, you know, I'm really attuned to when I have conversations about spirituality and freedom, for example, I want to talk to you about like, what does it mean to live liberated? I think, you know, and I see this a lot living in the Austin community as I have for the past few years. And I think there's a lot of, and when I was mentioning purity culture is also, I think there's an ironic temptation to actually check out of the body, check out of this moment and live in these kind of big ideas about, you know, freedom or sovereignty or even wellness and actually become disconnected from each other, from, you know, these. So anyway, all that rant to offer my thoughts and my reflection where you're saying that, you know, I hear there's a lot of inquiry, you know, a lot of questioning. What does it really mean? What is Josh? What is authentic Josh? What does it mean to live in accordance with nature's laws? Right? You know that Rilke quote about live the questions?
No, sure.
Oh man, I should. It's one of the most. I'm gonna right here. Rilke, live the questions. I think you'll really appreciate this. This is from his book, one of the top three books I ever read, called Letters to a Young Poet. He says, be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart and try to love the questions themselves, like locked rooms and like books that are now written in a very foreign tongue. Do not now seek the answers, which cannot be given you because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer.
Profound. It actually made me think of something even more distilled, which I love the words. I love the way that felt when you read it.
Yeah.
I was on a beach last year and one of my mentors, Margo Running, shared with me this quote from Rumi. She had this beautiful art book. We were sitting on the beach. It was like this sunny day. And my lady and I were out there going through some relationship growth together, you know, ceremonial and also psychotherapeutic. And she turned the page to me and she said, look at this beautiful quote. And it said so very simply, it said, the cure for the pain is the pain. And that encapsulates everything you just said. It's like sitting with the question, leaning into the question, being with the question of why is my pain or why is my dis-ease or my disharmony there in the first place, and not allowing the emotion of that being out of center to destroy one's self, or to feed addiction, or to make someone lash out at others. The cure for the pain is the pain, y'all. We're not going to get away from it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's pain on either side. Like that quote you read was very beautiful, and I've never heard that before. So thank you for sharing, because that was amazing.
Yeah.
I'm always looking for what's the practicality in everything. I'm a different spiritual seeker, I think, than most people. Maybe you can relate to this. I don't know. I hear so much in my life over these past 10 years of long-winded spirituality and really the commodification of spirituality, especially if you look at Instagram, where, like, you know, somebody might be in real estate for 20 years and have a bunch of money, and now they have a six-figure marketing budget, and all of a sudden they're a spiritual teacher pouring ayahuasca. And I think to myself, okay, well, this is actually someone that had a good intention, but the road to hell is paved, you know, with good intentions.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying, the point I'm getting at here is like, we all are seekers to some degree, but I think what makes me a different type of seeker is I am always looking for the practical. You could say it's because I'm a Taurus. You could say whatever you want to say, but I'm really always thinking, okay, from huge bodies of knowledge, how do I distill down the most important things? Which is why I really loved even doing that, the Rumi quote stacked on top of the quote you just had. Mm-hmm. I'm always looking for like the most simplest truth. Cause I think, man, the truth is so simple. It's so light, but it doesn't mean that it's always easy. You know, the truth of what makes us not want to face our stuff or doesn't want us to lean in. It's all quite silly, but I find myself getting caught up in the silliness quite a bit.
Well, first off, high five, fellow Taurus. Word. What day?
April 29th.
Okay. May 18th.
All right.
I will say this, man, and this is give us props. Tauruses are the best people to work with. We're just easy to work with. We're grounded. We, you know, we straight shooters, loyal, you know. So I see you. I see you, brother Taurus.
We're here. Taurus unite.
You know that quote, that idea, relationships, I'm sorry, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I've been a relationship coach for the last decade, and I see that over and over and over, that you know, people go into relationships with great intentions, always. I certainly always did, always do. And yet so much hell gets created in relationships by two people with the best of intentions. Like, that is such a domain in which that can be observed. I'm curious, are you in relationship now?
Yes.
How long have you been with your partner?
Well, that phrase actually, for whatever reason, just triggers the shit out of me. And I know we hear it a lot in our world, partner. But here's the flip side. We're not actually legally married yet. So we've been together for 6 years. It'll be 6 years this year. And
why does partner trigger the shit out of you?
I think it's because it's a business term. If you really want to talk about the etymology of the word partnership, I'm sure if you look back in Latin, it's derived to some form of business description or business verbiage. And I think in our ability as human beings to take words from one industry or one construct and move them over to another, we start losing the sacredness of the terms like my beloved or my wife or my husband. Of course, everybody, you know, it's just my take. It doesn't mean I'm ultimate truth, right? But I just think that word partner is really a homogenized version of intimacy and sacredness between a man and a woman, or however you relate.
Yeah, I get that. You know, it's funny. I use that word because over the years, having worked with and been friends with a lot of, you know, same sex.
Of course, I get why it's there.
Yeah, people, it's like, I'm always thoughtful. Just it's a blanket term. It's like, whatever your orientation, that covers it, right? We don't have to have that conversation.
Sure, I get it.
Yeah. I'm curious. Have you done a podcast, Josh, where you interviewed someone, or maybe not even so much the podcasting, but where like someone was promoting something, a wellness trend or something that you either then or later just realized, like, this is not just only pointless, but it might even be harmful.
I would never promote something that I ever thought was harmful, ever.
Yeah.
I'm just being honest here. Let's see. Yeah, I did used to promote a product called Feel Free. Which is a...
Oh, shit. I'd never heard about Feel Free.
Tonic. And there was some people that, now in retrospect, I mean, I've never had an addictive personality when it comes to Kratom or Kava. But I think for some people that they did have that. So I don't necessarily promote that anymore. Actually, not necessarily. We don't promote that anymore. Like, look, to quote Alan Watts, man, I am under no obligation to be the person I was 5 minutes ago. So if I do find that something is not of service to someone's wholeness or wellness, then I'm completely reserving the right to change my mind. That's, I think, a part of being liberated, is being able to change your mind based on new learning, right? Based on new wisdom.
100%, man. I think about, you know, I've been doing interviews for shit, man, I don't know, 12, 13 years, 14 years, ever since I've got into coaching and blogging back in like 2013, 12, 13.
Yeah.
Some of the shit that I remember saying on podcasts or different, I'm like, oh my God, it's kind of mortified at the simplicity of the things that I was offering that now, you know, it's like, oh, I have just so much more nuance and shades of gray.
Well, haven't you found this that really it goes back to what I mentioned earlier, the truth when it comes to liberation, to wholeness, to wellness, to well-being is actually quite simple. And you don't need a lot of words to explain it most of the time. Anytime I have found myself explaining something with way too many words, that's a clear sign that I'm actually needing more intelligence and more wisdom about what I'm sharing. In other words, if I'm sharing something that takes 5 minutes long to unpack, instead of in a few moments, you know, a handful of really powerful sentences, I'm either nervous and I'm using speaking too fast as a way to hide my fear, or I just simply don't know that I don't know, or I'm in the process of learning it as I'm sharing it. So I think that's a really good way to see it.
You know, my first book, the title is Tell the Truth, Let the Peace Fall Where It May. And I wrote that book. While I was writing that book, I had this, when I got out of the military at 26, I went traveling all over the world. Cause I just was so lost, man. I was so disconnected from my body. I couldn't feel anything and I just needed to go. I had a girlfriend at the time and I didn't want to stay with her, but I was so afraid to lose her. And so this was like back in 2001 and this was like before there was no social media. There were internet cafes. That's what you had. You had to go to an internet cafe, rent a computer for an hour and that's it. There were no cell phones, you know, there were pay phones. You know, even you had to buy like calling cards, you know, with these long codes to punch into the payphone.
Old school.
Anyway, I would go to cyber cafes, Josh, and I would write the longest emails to this woman that I had left behind. And they were designed to do pretty much two things. And really it was about confuse the shit out of her. I wrote so much to her I poured my heart out. It's like, it was a way of saying, I can't be with you, but also don't leave me, right? And I used so many words. I never said the truth, which is what I just shared with you. I'm afraid to lose you, and I can't choose you. I covered that truth up with so many fucking pages of emails to this woman because I was so terrified to just say that. You know, you share that the truth is simple and, you know, in that book, Tell the Truth, Let the Peace Fall Where It May, dude, there's a whole chapter on how simple the truth is. Yeah. And it always comes down to just in a sense, you know, I want this. I don't want that. That feels good. That doesn't feel good. This lights me up. That doesn't light me up. I don't know the answer to that. And yet it's so fascinating how terrifying it can be to just be in the simplicity of what is true in the moment.
Man, one of the best things I've ever heard, and I don't know who to quote, so whoever you are, thank you for what I'm about to share.
Yeah.
He said that wisdom and intelligence is taking very complicated things and making them easy, but stupidity is taking very easy things and making them complicated.
Yeah.
And I find that to be a really beautiful way to describe relationships, the way in which I and we and all of us come into sacred union or friendship or business relationship. And we bring all of our stories and our baggage with us. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is unconscious incompetence. In other words, we don't even know that we don't know it's there.
Right. Yeah, totally.
And when we show up, we're actually choosing the very person on an unconscious level. And this is what I think is really important. We choose unconsciously people to bring out our wounds, to challenge us, especially primarily in sacred relationships and intimate relationships, because that is the imago, to quote Hendrix, or that is the puzzle piece of our pain, to quote Dr. Stan Tatkin. Like we literally bring in the person that can push our deepest cuts, our deepest pain, so that we can actually be at peace with it Like Rumi said, the cure for the pain is the pain. It's not making the pain so fearful and so fabricated that we create stories and objectivity and rationalize our projections. It's all just bullshit. If we can just take a deep exhale and be in a space of truth with ourselves and truth with the other person, then you're right, man. That is really easy. But it doesn't mean that it's always going to be the easiest thing or the most simplistic thing to do because of the necessary unpacking on an unconscious level. All of the stories that we've made that overcomplicate it, and rightly so. I mean, we carry with us the seeds of our entire lineage and generations before us. So it's not as easy as we're painting it out to be. It's quite hard. That's why there's your coach, and that's why there's hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of relationship coaches in the world. Because human relationship is the most challenging, yet the most beautiful thing in the world, I think.
So let's talk about liberation and freedom. Because again, I think these are words that I certainly didn't understand for most of my life. And it's not that I fully understand them now, but I think they get really thrown around a lot in our culture. Yeah. And I think what most people mean by freedom is just, I get to do whatever I want to do. I get to say whatever I want to say and do whatever I want to do. And which, you know, I think in many ways is really just a way of avoiding facing our childhood wounding and avoiding taking responsibility for the very real impact that we have on each other and the world. So what do you mean when you talk about, you know, the liberated life, liberation, freedom, sovereignty? What do you really mean? And what do you think people are really seeking in that pursuit?
What people are really seeking when they're seeking liberation is they're seeking a life that's free from manufactured concern.
A life free from manufactured concern. Say more about that.
That's really what we're all seeking. Now, that's the cover seeking. There's the real soul seeking underneath it, but I'll go to the cover seeking first. What we all really want, and I'll quote Jim Carrey on this. He said, I realized the power of being a comedian because I realized that for just a moment, I could give people freedom from concern. That was Jim Carrey's power. He was so good that he would just for a moment, he would give people freedom from concern. It didn't mean that all their problems went away. It didn't mean that their life fundamentally changed, but just for a moment, just for, you know, an hour or some breaths, he would give them a ability to disconnect from their pain and their stories that were holding them hostage. So that's the topical kind of conscious societal narrative when it comes to liberation, is we want to be free from manufactured concern. Manufactured concern is finance, matrix, survival-driven paradigms that teach us we're not enough, that we're too fat, that we're lazy, that we're stupid, that we're not lovable, that we're unworthy, and that we're not part of the tribe.
Like there's a lot of concerns that are heaped on us just by the social system we live in, the governmental system, the capitalist system, the whatever, the systems that we do society in. There are concerns that are created from that. Yes. I think a lot of our seeking is to be, is to have many of those concerns alleviated. Like just the drive to make more money. I don't have to worry about paying my bills, for example.
Agreed. That's like that's an example of a manufactured concern. Right. There are actually real concerns, right? Like, can I eat? Can I drink water? Am I healthy? Can I give and receive love? Those are all things that we need to survive. Can I breathe? I mean, those are really all the things that we need to survive. And people might push back on that and say, well, you don't really need human connection. Oh yeah. Well, look at all the studies that show when a baby isn't touched, that it will die.
Yeah.
When a baby isn't touched, it'll die. That's a real scientific fact.
And die younger when we're not in relationship.
No doubt. All those things that I mentioned are like such the biggest lens that we can see this topical manufactured concern from, but on a way deeper level, because there's always something deeper, as I'm sure you can relate as a coach, like whatever a client presents as their problem is probably not their real problem. It's a deeper problem that's connected to the story that they're sharing what the problem is. In other words, there's a cover emotion or there's a cover story, just like there's a cover for manufactured consent. But what I really believe it is, man, in my 44-year window, and I'm sure I'll learn a lot more, I really think the deepest concern when it comes to people being in fear is that they don't actually know who they are and they don't know how loved and how powerful they are. Including myself at times. We forget, we literally forget how resourceful, how loved, and how powerful we are. Those are actual soul concerns that we're in the process of learning how to unravel. But what presents in society are these topical manufactured concerns that actually take away our capacity, our chi, our energy to go into the depth to actually solve the real riddle. Am I loved? Am I worthy? Am I healthy? Am I at peace? These are the things that if we are afforded time by, and that's why I have finance in the Wellness Pentagon. If we have mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, and financial nourishment of self, in other words, we've mastered the Monopoly game. We've mastered the game so much, man, that we're able to nourish that lens and see clearly through that lens. Well, then guess what's on the other side? It's the capacity for the real soul seekers. I have the book right here, man. A Modern Path of Initiation, Rudolf Steiner, How to Know Higher Worlds. Mm. One of the best books ever. And in this book, he describes when a student has a really, really genuine, humble desire to know God and to be liberated in their heart, the right teacher cannot not share it with them. They can't not share it with them. They have to share it with them because the student's intention is pure. But here's the rub and here's the paradox. We can't ever get to that spaciousness where we have the capacity to do real spiritual work or to have the energy to actually look within and to have the time affluence or the spiritual time to look within ourselves and answer these soul questions unless we first mastered the manufactured concerns and questions. It's such a paradox because you can't do the first one unless you're in the humble answering question phase of what Rumi said in the other quote that you mentioned. But then at the same time, we're juggling this other world of responsibilities and wounding and trauma and bills and health and life and children. So we have to hold them both. I think if we want to know other worlds, we have to be able to master the one that we're in. And then once we master all the five sides of self in the world that we're in, then we can really do the deeper spiritual work. And yes, one could say that as we master those five sides, then for sure, we have a lot of lessons come up that help us answer the soul questions. But I really think it's a split. I think it's a split where we do one for a while, and then that starts to feed our other curiosity for the soul.
That all resonates deeply with me. I'm hearing too the distinction between like the survival work and the soul work, right? The survival work is how do I get by in this society to create a relative freedom from the manufactured concern, because we're never going to get free from that. I mean, there's always going to be some manufactured concern that we are going to be confronted with. That doesn't go away so long as we are related to other humans. And even if that does, let's say, we go live in our cave somewhere, we go off grid, there's other concerns that will arise that are survival based, that are, you know, death is coming for me. That concern will never, ever, I never escape that. But the soul work, I really love the way you frame that. I've noticed in my journey, my most painful moments have been when I felt isolated, alone, unloved, unworthy, like no matter what I did, I wasn't a success. Again, the fear-based mindsets of, it's like a trap of sorts. Talk about the opposite of liberation, you know, being trapped in a hell of my own making, really. And the biggest breakthroughs came when like no circumstances changed. I didn't have more money in my bank account all of a sudden, or I didn't have a new job or a new girlfriend or none of that. But it was a moment of mindset shift when I was able to connect with that infinite part of myself, you know, the higher self, the God self, the truth of who I, whatever words we want to put on it. But in that moment, there was no such thing. You know, Rumi has another beautiful quote. I mean, you've heard this one. We are so connected that the word connected doesn't even make sense. I love that. We are so connected that the word connected doesn't even make sense. Like that one sentence has brought me such comfort at times when I felt so disconnected from the world, from life, from spirit, from source, from blah, blah, blah. And realizing, whoa, like even in that, you know, ayahuasca journeys I've had where even in that, I used to, you know, the prayer position where your hands, you know, just make a prayer. Well, I didn't grow up in a tradition that prayed like that. You put your hands and that was weird to me. And so in the yoga world, like friends would do that. Yoga teachers would do that. They'd want me to do that. And I'd be like, this is stupid. I can't relate to this. I remember doing an ayahuasca journey and I was like in it, man. And I was trying to be holy in my body and all this. And all of a sudden there was this epiphany. It was like, there's no way that I can hold my body that isn't holy. It doesn't exist. There's nothing I can do with my body that isn't holy. whether I pray like this or whether I even giving the middle finger has a holiness. It's just, it's all God, if you will. Like that, you know, we're so connected. The word connected doesn't even make sense. It's not an excuse to go around giving the middle finger to people, but it was a moment of profound relief that, like, I can't fuck this up. There are consequences to everything, but I am a child of God. I am, Abraham Hicks. I'm at the leading edge, as you are, Josh, as everyone, as all our listeners are, at the leading edge of the creation of the universe, man. How could that be somehow fundamentally flawed? Oh, the liberation, the freedom, just in that moment to breathe. I find that, you know, in these moments of real deliverance from the manufactured and whatever concerns, there's a deep sigh, a deep breath, a deep relief that hits me. And I'm curious, because you're in relationship, you're a father, you have two kids. Are they mm-hmm. girls?
A boy and a girl.
A boy and a girl. I mean, you are daily confronted with the, you know, the limitations of just being human, being in relationship, being a father, being not a partner, being a beloved. See, I see you.
Gotcha.
How do you move through all of the obligations that are pulling on you, the concerns? How do you be with that in a way that's, like, how do you hold the paradox? How do you get what I'm getting at? The paradox of knowing, you know, at your core, you are a liberated being, and yet you are held in the, you know, you're held by the strings of attachment to people you care about, to obligations you have as a father, as a you're not a husband. I don't know what you, right? How do you do that? How do you hold those?
There's so much there. There's like four or five questions. I think really the answer doesn't come from my mind. It comes from the amalgamation of every single conversation I've ever had with myself and others that I remember in a moment of trigger. And isn't that wild? I don't say that from a pressure or a perfectionistic standpoint. Every single conversation I've ever had, you know, there'll be little nuggets from this one that plant in my unconscious. If you look at the data around NLP, we really can only process about, I think it's 256 or just a couple hundred bits of information per second. But there's 11 million bits coming at us. So every single time I'm with you or I learn from someone or I'm in a conversation with someone, something gets stored. And the only way I can have, I'll use a computer analogy, the random access memory to be able to remember who I am, what I've been through, what I've learned, so that when the trigger comes, I can actually really wholly treat it as a teacher and not just as something, as an excuse for me to lash out or project.
Yeah,
it only comes from my ability to continually nourish myself in all these five sides. I'll give you a good example. Yesterday, so I've been going through a genetic upgrade. My children got a little stomach bug and I caught it. I'm on the tail end of it now. I said I wasn't going to mention it on the podcast, but here we go in the vein of truth. Probably. And when a man or a woman is triggered and they're sick, their triggers can come a lot faster. And so the best way to use a trigger as a teacher, if in the moment you weren't able to be a humble student, is to come back around with love and vulnerability and take ownership for the projection or outburst, which I did. Kids were screaming yesterday, super tired, end of the day, huge day, and lashed out because the kids were screaming and I was tired. And then I thought, that is just like exactly the opposite of how I'd like to be. So then, of course, the next morning, wake up and go to my woman and say, hey, you know, my behavior is not excused. And I can totally see how that impacted you and the children in a negative way. Thanks. And I'm really sorry about that. There's no excuse for how I acted. And there's no defense either. But I'm just dealing with a lot right now. And I'm on the tail end of this sickness. You know, I apologize. Just that vulnerability in those moments, because you asked me, how do I hold it all? How do I hold the paradox? Yeah. It's fucking impossible to hold the paradox in perfection all the time. It's just not, even that question, I'm like, man, you know, my mind loves to ask questions like that. I love those questions because I'm always learning, you know, how do I do a better job of it? But guess what? Better will never get us to perfect.
Yeah.
Better will never, ever, ever get us to perfect.
Yeah.
And just the fact that we can bring humility when we're not able to carry the two worlds, when the five sides of myself are not nourished, when I notice that in a moment, instead of my trigger being a real teacher, that it became something I was in slavery to. Mm. And then I projected that slavery onto my friends, my woman, or my children.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the degree of my wisdom. That's the degree of my liberation. I don't care who it is, Osho, Muji, anybody you could ever follow. All of these men and even women that are spiritual leaders, they all put their pants on. They all deal with issues off the stage or off the microphone. They are all human. They all give themselves grace. Even Paramahansa Yogananda, you know, writes about this in his books. There's just no way we can ever score a perfect report card. And I think it's actually the last thing I'll say is the white knuckling on the steering wheel of having the answer to your question be something that we're always in perfection of is actually a part of the ego that's kind of subversively coming in the back door that says the only way you can teach others to be whole or to be liberated is if you yourself are held to a standard of perfectionism, which is actually the biggest trick that I guess you could say the devil or the devil in us likes to play, is that we can't ever really share and be authentic unless we can be perceived by others as having it on all together or having it all perfect. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the ego's biggest lies. It's the very thing that the ego wants to be integrated and healed from. But if we allow the ego to hold us to that standard, it hurts us and it hurts other people.
Well, you know, Josh, I feel like, you know, again, this is our first time really dialoguing, and I feel like I'm talking to very much a kindred spirit. It's almost a mirror reflection in many ways. It's fascinating because I know it's, you know, I'm interviewing you, so there's a certain dynamic, right? And it's just interesting to me. Because again, I feel like you and I could just philosophize and talk really, you know, in a beautiful way, these deep and profound and paradoxical inquiries for hours, man. I mean, there's just so much richness. And I think also, I appreciate you sharing also how that looks like in your relationship sometimes. Sometimes it's as simple as an apology, being able to just say.
Oh, yeah. Most times it's actually just as simple as saying, hey.
Yeah.
Well, actually, and you know this because you're a relationship coach. Yeah. Can I give like a really practical tool to everyone here?
Please.
All right. If somebody would have taught me this when I was in my 20s, I would have gone through like 50% less pain. So if y'all are looking for less pain, hear me out.
Yeah.
If you can use nonviolent communication, nonviolent meaning that you say what you heard, you acknowledge the person, you use reflectiveness, and then you recommit to something more beautiful, it changes the whole game. Yeah. It changes the whole game. So it's always 100% of the time that an apology, and by the way, apology doesn't mean that you just say you're sorry. A true, real, mature apology would sound something like this. Hey, I just want to be open and honest about my behavior. I can see how my behavior did blank. You haven't even apologized yet, right? You're just setting the frame and you're speaking from the eye. This is a big one for nonviolent communication that, I mean, it's a practice, but like practice will eventually make almost perfect. And so if you can just set the frame, it disarms the other person. It could be man, woman, man, whatever, however you relate. But if you can just say like, hey, I can see how my, this is a beautiful phrase. I can see how my behavior may have created blank. Right. And then let them respond or not. I just want to take ownership and apologize for that. It doesn't excuse my behavior. I'm genuinely sorry for the ABC that I did. And I'm curious if you're open to creating something different together. Or I'm curious if you'd be willing to hear my pain, if you could be curious about my pain. Now, notice nowhere in that whole framework did I ever point the finger at someone else. Did I ever say you made me do this or you did that? Because then it just opens up a space for the other person to share what's real for them. And then the real beauty is if you have I'm in a heterosexual relationship, right? So if my woman comes to me and says, Yeah, you know what? Thank you for sharing that. When I heard blank, it made me feel blank. And the story that I told myself when I felt blank was that you don't love me or I can't trust you or whatever it is. And then I go right back. Wow, I can hear from you that what you were experiencing was pain. And, you know, I can absolutely understand how my reaction to you would create that. You know, can I share with you something that I was feeling in that moment? And then you get their permission, yes. And then share whatever you're going to share, but share it from the I, you know. I was feeling like I wasn't enough. I was feeling like I wasn't making enough money or being sweet enough or my dick wasn't big enough or whatever, whatever it is. And then it just creates this spaciousness where there doesn't have to be so much war. We don't have to suffer so much. And you can use that nonviolent communication in everything. It's not just intimate relationships.
That's right. So if you're listening, rewind about 3 minutes. Josh just gave a masterclass on nonviolent communication, but also repair, how to repair and offer a simple, sincere, real apology. That also, I think what a lot of men, especially, we struggle with this, not that women don't, but I think men struggle with apologizing as though it's an admission of wrongdoing, right? It's I shouldn't have done the thing. And that's not at all. Look, in some cases, yeah, maybe that's there. If you broke an agreement, perhaps breaking that agreement wasn't a good idea. But yeah. I do things that unintentionally hurt my wife every fucking day. Not intentionally, but every day. Maybe I just am in a particular mode when she's wanting to connect and I'm not in a connecting mode and I sort of turn away from her when she would have wanted me to turn towards her. Right. And she has an experience around that. Being able to just say, oh, babe, look, I'm sorry. I realize that I'm in a particular mode. You're in that mode. And I see how that, I know that that might be hard for you. And I'm sorry.
Yes.
Right. It's not an admission of like, I'm a bad person. I did wrong, but it's an acknowledgement of the impact that how I'm showing up helps. And that, you know, you said this at the beginning, Josh, like harmony, man, balance. It's about, we're constantly coming slightly off balance. It's about just righting the ship so that we're back on balance. And that's what a simple, sincere apology just like rights the ship right back. So we're back in balance so that we don't go too far off keel that now we're, you know, we're 5 years in and we've never apologized once because I don't think I ever did anything wrong. But now, you know, we're a month away from getting divorced and we don't even know it because we think everything's fine. And our partner's like dying inside.
You know, what really is a big red flag for me is you hear these couples that have been together for like a year, 3 years, and they go, we've never had an argument.
Yeah.
I'm like, good luck. Cause when that levee breaks, when that levee on the dam finally breaks, you are in for a flood. And by the way, if you've never had an argument and you've been with somebody for a long time and you're just that couple that never quote argues, somebody's full of shit. Somebody's not being their authentic self. The whole nature of relationship is conflict. How are you supposed to know anyone if you never have conflict? That's just not possible.
My closest relationships are always forged in conflict. Not disrespect, but in disagreement and conflict and realizing, okay, we don't see quite the same on this, or, you know, a communication line was crossed or dropped, again, not with malice, but just because we don't know each other at the beginning. We're learning each other. You know, I have a friend that's sarcastic. He's Australian. It's the language of Australia. I fucking hate sarcasm. He and I had to really go to battle at the beginning of our relationship. But you know what? Because of our commitment to this kind of communication, to owning our own part, to taking ownership of our impact on the other, and man, we're fucking tight and close. And I don't know how to say, I was gonna say brother, blovers, but there's no word that doesn't exist. Like we're bro lovers. We have a full-on bromance. We're full-on bromance because through conflict, through respectful leaning in, through conflict and all of that, like again, like what you just shared, it was a masterclass. Again, if you're listening to this, go back, rewind. The last 10 minutes are gold. When it comes to, oh man, creating harmonious relationships.
You know what I find is really subversive? I like that word because it's almost like a submarine, right? Our emotions are like water And from what I've learned about my emotions, they can either take me for a ride or I can be the captain on the ship that's just actually controlling the boat, if you know what I mean. And the reason I use that metaphor is because a lot of subversiveness comes from our passed down pain. And passed down pain is like what our grandparents went through, what our great-great-grandparents went through. There's a term that's emotional epigenetics, and I've been really fascinated with this, by the way, for a long time. And it's in a program that I have now. It'll be out by the time this podcast airs, and it's the Liberated Life Community. And in that community, I go deep into emotional epigenetics because the same way that our physical symptoms or symptomology is passed down from our epigenetic expression is the exact same lens that emotions and trauma pours through. You don't have to be Bessel van der Kolk. You don't have to be Mark Groves. You know, you don't have to be Mark Wolin, the man that wrote the book, It Didn't Start With You, the president of Family Constellations. You don't have to understand the science and the epidemiology of psychoneuroimmunology and how stress becomes thoughts and thoughts become things. I can just share it in a very simple way. If a child in the mother is very traumatized by the mother's stress, in other words, if for 9 months that mother is in fight or flight the whole time, there's actually research that shows that that offspring has, like, I think a 30 to 50% chance of becoming homosexual, because that trauma is a signal from life that it's not safe to multiply. It's not safe to multiply. Now, of course, everybody's free to love each other in the way they are. And in no way am I saying that the only reason people become homosexual is because of that fact. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that a lot of the scientific research points to that. It also points to people coming out of the womb being hypervigilant. Hypervigilance is a state of wired nervous system where there's a constant threat, security scanning going on. So why am I saying all this? It's because the same way that you process with your Australian friend is the same way that we process with our sacred, our beloved, our man, our woman, whoever. We are all running software that we were given that really, a lot of the times, man, isn't ours. This software, this emotional epigenetic software that we have been gifted is many times a gift that we never asked for. We didn't necessarily want it. If you go into the Vedic technology, you might say, well, we chose our parents, which is a whole other podcast. But what I'm saying is we get these gifts and we develop friendships and intimacies with people that we are here to heal this emotional epigenetic transfer from. You don't need the science. If you want to go into the science, you can. You can go down a very long road of how trauma and thoughts become things. But I'm sharing this because it's so easy for us to sit on a podcast and say, oh, well, this friendship taught me this, or this person was bad for me, or this was a toxic relationship. Many times that wasn't from lessons we learned just in this lifetime. It was things that were actually given to us. It was gifts that were in our neurology and in our entire nervous system that sometimes take many generations, if I'm being real. They take many generations to unwind, unpack.
Yeah. Man, so many rabbit holes, Josh. So many rabbit holes to wander down into. Tell us about the Liberated Life Community.
So this is a place where I built it for me, an earlier version of me, full stop. So I got all the things. I got the house. I got the podcast. I did all the stuff that I thought was going to completely fulfill me.
Yeah.
And I realized that I was still out of alignment in many ways that I wasn't being honest with myself about. So Liberated Life is a safe place where people can explore these five sides of self and go from struggling on the inside to being securely attached and peaceful on the outside instead of just faking it until we make it. And it's specifically for people that feel like they've been on the path for a while, yet they still don't feel embodied, which is, quite frankly, most people.
Yeah.
And it's a place where we can all get real tactical assessments where we can go from a zero or a one on a self-integration scale of mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, financial, and work our way up to a 10 together. I really love practicality, man, as I'm sure you can tell. Like, we're Tauruses, right? So we want to know, like, what's here on the earth. Yeah, it's a place where people can learn about who they really are. And it's a place where we support that in each other. And it's a systematized process with different programs that I've built, Authentic Abundance and Emotional Epigenetics and the teachings of the Wellness Pentagon, and really utilizing those three massive pillars to give somebody a clear path, a map that we weren't born with, that nobody actually got. Most people never got this map about how to be free, about how to be liberated in their life. And so that's my goal with the community, is just a 90-day start and an ongoing way to nourish these sides of you and to understand that you are not just the thoughts you're thinking. You are this amazing, beautiful, loved person. But the war that's inside of you is actually being felt by everyone outside of you. And you can feel it too. And it doesn't have to be this way. You can actually be in a support structure where you don't have to fake it anymore. You can just be yourself. And man, that feels good to exhale when you're just being yourself.
When does that launch?
2 months.
So is that in April?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great. I think this podcast will come out beginning of May-ish. So
great.
Yeah, 25. So yeah, should be out. What's the website? Where can people?
Liberatedlife.com. Liberatedlife.com.
Okay, great. Have you had that URL for a long time, or did you pay a lot of money for it? That's a great URL.
No, I honestly just came to me, man. It just came to me because I called it in, to use that spiritual term. I called it in.
That's a good one, man. These days, URLs, even when I was going through the renaming of the podcast, man, oh my God, it took me a year to really decide to rename it. And when the name finally came, it literally happened in an instant.
That's it.
But a lot of it was also, came up with a great name and be like, oh, go, does the URL exist? Ah, shit. Nope. There's 17 other podcasts by that name, and every URL variation's gone. Okay, forget that.
Yes.
And on and on and on. So liberatedlife.com. That's great.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Well, I wish you the best with that, man. Again, as a, just sensing the kindred nature of our Taurian spirits. I've no doubt you're going to serve, and you already surely have, and just continue to serve more people through the example of your own life, man, of your own, you know, I think I just relate to so much of your own journey. My whole life has been an experiment, and the work that I do today is really the turning back around to the people coming up behind me saying, look, I'm not saying I figured anything out. No absolutes. I got nothing absolute to share with you, but I've been doing a lot of experimenting, and this is what I've found works. If I want to have a healthy relationship, here's some things you might consider trying. Right. And I get the sense that, you know, you're very similar in that regard. Just, man, humbly, like, here's what I've learned, everybody, and take from it what serves you, and the rest let's figure out together. I'm right here with you. So,
dude, thank you. The last thing I'll say, I went to this Vipassana in 2016.
Oh yeah.
And Goenka was on the screen. We all watched this video, and he said, you know, when it comes to this and everything else, take what resonates and leave the rest.
Beautiful. Thank you for coming on Bridging Connections, Josh. Really appreciate having you, man.
Thanks, man.